It's Pitch Invasion, episode number 4 of season 2. Welcome to it once again. After a week where, if you are an Orlando Pirates fan, you are probably still trying to come to terms with what happened. You are without Coach Mitro, but it's time for Rulani to step up. Wasn't a great way to start his tenure. We'll touch on that and so much more that happened in both the APSA Premiership and, of course, the MTN 8 in South African football a little before we cast our eyes to European football. Quick reminder, my name is Luazi Zikubu.
Ola Makwaza, hurting, and yeah, what can I say? Pirates fans, we are in a mess.
As much as you're hurting, I've got a huge smile on my face, but hey, look, it's football, so it does happen. And on the line, we've got a special guest on our 100th episode, or is actually, no, it's a year. It's a year since we're on air. So, Joe Maluleka, welcome to Pitch Invasion once again, and a special occasion, and you've just been saying that, unfortunately, you're not with us in studio to have some shampopo after this, but you're still very much a welcome guest on the show.
Yeah, good one. Thanks, Luazi, and good day to you guys and Kola as well. Hey, happy anniversary, guys. I would have loved to be there, but I think maybe you think I'll finish the champagne, but it's okay.
Well, you know, you speak about champagne. It's certainly on ice if you're an Orlando Pirates fan or if you're an Orlando Pirates player or in any way affiliated with the Buccaneers. 3 defeats in 3 different competitions in a matter of a week. On top of that, you lose Coach Mitro in some rather shady circumstances. We're not going to touch too much on that, though. Joe, what do you think is going on over at Orlando Pirates right now?
Yeah, look, I think in terms of the champagne being on the ice, I think they've just placed the orders. It has not yet even arrived yet. They still have to wait for that to arrive. But look, it's been a turbulent week for Pirates. You know, 3-0 back-to-back defeats. It's painful for Pirates supporters, but also to lose the coach as well. You know, Mitro leaving the club unexpectedly, bolt out of the blue. Although some people will say it's been a long time coming. I mean, for me, it was a surprise. I knew at some point he was going to leave. Was there talk? Is he going to go to Bafana? I said, he's never going to go to Bafana. Mm. Pirates will not allow him to go there. Is he going to Zamalek? I don't know. There's talk of him going to Zamalek, but what we know is that he's gone back home to attend to personal issues. But that would have had an impact on Pirates. But it's also an opportunity for Rulani to step up to the plate. Can we do that? Well, we saw what happened over the weekend.
Mm. You know, and my question, you know, is sort of based with the whole Pirates situation. You know, we've been talking for the last maybe year and a half about how good the project has been since Coach Mitro came back to the picture, and how, you know, really quickly he's taken Pirates back to, you know, where they feel they belong after, especially that season where they finished outside the top 8. Where do you think that leaves the project right now? Yes, you know, we've touched on Coach Rulani. This is a new, new territory for him as well now as the head coach, as the man who has the last, the final say officially. But where do you think it leaves the project of Orlando Pirates?
I think it shouldn't affect the project that much, really, because if you come to think about it, I mean, Rulani was there, he knows how to win, and Fadlu also has been there over the last couple of, over the last season. He's been there, they've been working with Mitro, all of them, they've been contributing together. Mm. The players have been there, they know what is at stake, they know what needs to happen. I think they've obviously just gone over the last two games. It's just a bad patch of results, but once they are back to their winning, formula, they should continue with the project that Mitro left. Because for me, and this is my philosophy, if you're a good coach, whether you're there or not, your team should still be able to function successfully. Yeah. Look at, let me just to veer off a little bit, Bloemfontein Celtic, Steve Compella built that team. Mm. Steve is gone, the team continues to win. So it should be the same with Pirates. I think once they've gone over these issues with Mitro, they should be able to get back to their winning ways.
Okay, fair point from Joe. Ola, where do you stand in that? As both an analyst and a fan of Orlando Pirates, how are things going at the moment, and where do you see them improving?
You know, I must be honest to you. I have to slightly disagree, you know, because, you know, to lose 3 games in a row in 3 different competitions, something's wrong. Mm. You know what I mean? And you can't ignore the fact that, you know, possibly that, you know, the players, you know, had an inkling that, okay, Mitro's going to leave. And I'm hoping that is the reason that, you know, they found out that Misha's going to leave, and maybe that, you know, it didn't sit well with the players and their minds went into the game. But you've got to remember, they were hammered by SuperSport, right? They didn't even look like they were in the game. And against Highlands Park, you know, they played okay, they recovered, but they also could have gone down big, you know, if Highlands Park were, with all due respect, a much better team. And I think this is probably a come to Jesus moment now, where they have to get everybody together and say, guys, listen, it's three in a row. We are title contenders here. Because remember, the only team that looks like that can stop Sundowns for the last couple of years is Pirates and maybe Wits, right?
Yeah.
And you, with three losses in a row, you know, I'm not so sure where the confidence is going to come from. And, you know, one of the biggest disappointing, or let me just say, one of the disappointments of the losses was the MTN8, because I mean, that's the one thing that can bring immediate success. It's a cup, you know, game, and we can restore, you know, the season quickly by winning the MTN8, because that was Pirates' problem over the last couple of years, is that, okay, we've done well, but where are the trophies?
Yeah.
And that's gone.
But Paul, are you guys won the Cullen Black Label Cup, right?
Hey, and they did, Joe, and they couldn't stop celebrating about it. They couldn't stop telling us about Golo Daye already, and we're just like, guys. And I said, no, actually,
something
I did say, guys, no, we are just glorifying the Cullen Black Label, you know. And since, this was last week, since, in a matter of a week, what has happened? Three defeats, back-to-back.
And I think, you know, the one interesting thing for me was that, you know, it's almost like, you know, Rulani was shoved into this position. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, over the last year or two, you know, there's been these jokes about, oh, who's coach? Who's the actual coach? Is it Rulani? Is it Micho? But now I'm looking at it now and I'm thinking to myself, maybe Micho took his secrets along with him, you know, and left. And Micho, you know, and Rulani was, you know, probably the guy that was actually the number two. And we thought, you know, he was coaching. But, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel is that Fadlu Davids is still there. So, you know, if those two get together, I mean, Fadlu Davids, you know, had a successful run with Maritzburg, you know, the season before last. And maybe if those two get together and formulate a plan, you know, to resurrect, you know, Pirates this season. Because, guys, three losses in three different competitions. I'm sorry, I don't care what league you're from. That spells trouble.
Okay, I mean, from a neutral point of view then, both for you, Ola and Joe, you know, can we not then say, at least, at the very least, for Pirates, it's happening this early in the season? So they've got literally all of the campaign to recover. And we know, based on the squad that they have, the quality that they have, that they've got the ability to recover, Joe?
Yeah, look, I mean, technically, I hear what Paul is saying. Technically, it's not for me. It's not three games in a row, because you still have got the second leg for the Champions League. If you win that, then you're through. And then
if they fail to win
it,
that,
can
though,
boost your morale.
If they fail to win that, on the other side of the
court, that's a big if, guys. That's a big if.
That's but you're playing at home. I think playing at home.
We're at home against Highlands.
Listen, I told a lot of people, I said, watch out for Highlands Park. That team. Now, when Owen Dagama says they've paid their school fees last season, he means it. Look at this team. A lot of teams are going to struggle against Highlands Park. The same way Cape Town City came into the scene, you know, last season, everybody was struggling. Highlands Park, they've got the players, you know, they've got the hunger, they've got the desire. And the other thing, their home base, the stadium, they, you know, when they're playing at home, they're difficult to beat that.
And they get good numbers. They get good numbers.
Yeah. No, exactly, okay. They got good numbers, and that's good for the morale there also.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned Cape Town City, Joe, because what it does, this whole thing with Orlando Pirates, what has happened over the past couple of days, it leaves Coach Peter Mosimane, who takes up the role in this analogy of the king of South African football and in the coaching landscape. It means Benny McCarthy, a knight in waiting, has now some competition in the two young coaches at Orlando Pirates in trying to catch Mamelodi Sundowns, which inadvertently, some might say, is a good thing, is a further good thing for South African football and the young coaches that we are developing.
No, it's good. You know, I also don't want to count Gavin out. You know, Gavin Hunt is still in the mix. His Wits are looking quite decent this season.
Even after the result on MTN8?
Yeah, even after that result. I mean, they've looked decent in the league, and you can never count any Gavin Hunt team out. But I think, you know, it would have been nice if, as much as I'm enjoying Fadlu at Pirates, but I think Fadlu, you know, for the sake of spreading out the young coaching talent, after this season, between him and Rulani, one of them have to stay. And, you know, I know somebody said to me the other day, yeah, but look at Sundowns with Mangoba Nliti and Pizzo. And I think
Wendell is there, yeah.
Wendell is there as well. Mm. And it's possible that Pirates could build, you know, something similar to Sundowns and have that core coaching group of coaches. But the difference is those coaches are experienced. Right?
Sundowns.
Yes. And it's much easier to get coaches who are experienced to sit down together and put pride aside. When you are young, hungry lions, your ambitions are still fresh.
Yeah.
You know, that can become a bit more difficult. And I just worry that, you know, maybe there could be some form of a clash between those two, because essentially, you know, I don't think Fadlu just wants to be in the background. The guy was the head coach of a team that was successful a couple of seasons ago. So he has ambitions of his own too. And I think if South African football wants to spread out that sort of pool of young coaches, I think the guys like Micho need to be the last in South African football, where a guy can come in from obscurity, as much as Micho's done well.
Yeah.
But now, guys, let's reset. Let's give young coaches a break. Let's give them a chance. So I don't want to see another European coach, you know, flocking to the country, with all due respect, without being sounding xenophobic. But can we just see guys like Fadlu come into the mix? Can we just see those sort of coaches get opportunities as well?
When we talk about young coaches, and Joe, this is for you. When you talk about young coaches, what sort of the age gap that are we using? Someone like Clinton Larson, who has gone to Chipa and has made them even more difficult to beat, does he qualify as a young coach? And you look at you add someone like Lehlonolo Siema at Celtic, who alongside John Maduka are doing a fine job with a young squad. So you know we do have a very nice sort of umbrella of young coaches, but I just want to, you know, before we do move on, where do we stop when we say, you use the term young coach?
Well, I mean, considering that in the past you've had like 60-year-old, 70-year-old, you know, going and coming back, guys who are close to pension, you know, a 50-year-old, 40-year-old for me, even at 35, I mean, it's even at 35, you know, the former Chelsea coach is going to Russia, Villas-Boas, Tamin Osaka, under 40. You know, you can have under 40s, you know, taking charge of Pirates and Chiefs. But, you know, the position at Pirates, it's so much pressure. Because you're going to get disappointed. There is a European coach coming to coach Orlando Pirates. If they cannot get Pizzo, of course. Oh. You know, that's what's going to happen. So you need someone with international experience to be coaching at a club like
Orlando
Pirates.
Could he be Portuguese with grey hair that used to coach Man United or Chelsea? I'm not sure.
No.
It's gonna happen, but it's gonna be a big name, you know, because it's a big name, you know, with high ambitions. I wouldn't be surprised in the next couple of weeks if you hear that Pirates have got a new coach.
But you know what my problem will be with that, Joe, as a Pirates fan, is that you know, the season has just kicked off. This coach still has to acclimatize in so many ways. He still has to pick his, you know, starting 11, his team and his methods and so forth. We don't even know how well he can speak the language and so forth. So there's a lot of personal adjusting that guy has to do before we even get to on the field stuff. Now, when we get to on the field stuff, there's a momentum that this guy has to rebuild. And, you know, I'd rather stick with Rulani and Fadlu right now, because they've been there the last season or two. And they at least have an idea of what to do. So if this guy just comes in, and I think that was the issue that Chiefs had with Solinas last season, was that the guy
one of the many
you know, one
issues.
Of many. The guy came in the middle of the night and, you know, was asked to turn Chiefs around. And I mean, the guy still had to adjust. I don't even think he even had bought a home yet before he'd even taken to the field, you know. So
are we you know, before we quickly move on from Rulani, because there's so much else to talk about, but are we, because it sounds like we are all in agreement in some sort of way that perhaps this is too early for Rulani to be the head coach for an extended period. So is that where we are, Joe? Is it not the time for him to take over as permanent head coach?
Look, if the thing is, it's up to him. If he feels he's ready for the challenge, he's got to be honest and say, yes, I'm ready. I mean, he's a keen student of the game. I mean, Rulani reads, he does research, you know, he always continuously refreshes himself. Whether the players will respond or react quickly to what he wants them to do, it's another thing. And I think it's, once again, when I say Paris is a big club, you need probably another coach. If he's going to be the head coach, they've got Fatu as the assistant. They're probably going to have to get another assistant coach to assist, to make sure that the whole team is taken care of. Because you also have to manage the other dynamics. The players who are not playing, you need to have someone who's going to look after them to make sure that they do not become a negative influence on the team overall. So you need someone who will be able to manage that as well. Personally, I think, yes, give him the chance. He's been to Sundowns. He knows what it's like. He knows how to win. So if he's ready, give him the job. But otherwise, I think knowing Pirates from history, I think they'll probably go out and get another experienced, in brackets, coach to make sure that he takes the team forward.
So I know we have to move off the topic, but I just want to say something that, you know, the reason why I'm saying, for the sake of South African football, Rulani, or maybe let's say someone like Fadlu Davis, needs to move on and find another job from Pirates, more so Rulani, is that I worry about the culture dynamic within the player and the relationships. Because remember, Rulani was the assistant coach. And with most sports teams, the assistant coach is often the middleman between the coach. And he's the guy that you see as a friend. Mm. He's the guy, that the shoulder to lean on in the team. Mm. And now, in the middle of the night, they've turned that around. And now he has to be the main man.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the players can relate, then change their way, or let's just say change the way they view Rulani now. Because Rulani now has to crack the whip. So Rulani 2 weeks ago was the guy, maybe, hey guys, let's go have some a meal and let's go discuss, you know, maybe something that coach said.
Yeah.
And, you know, very friendly to the players. And now all of a sudden he has to be, you know, the one, you know, cracking the whip.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's going to translate well into the players. Hence I say to you, that's my only fear with this season, if Rulani takes over, is that I wonder if the players themselves can quickly adjust from 3 weeks ago, this guy being, you know, like a friend to me.
Yep.
Now, he's like my boss.
Okay, well, that's a fair point, a very good point.
It's a valid point,
valid point. But I guess, we can only wait and see what's going to happen with that story. And with Orlando Pirates, I think we can all as well agree that what they need to do is win their next game. Whatever competition it is, whatever game they're coming, they're playing, whomever they're facing, they need to win that game in order just to get back on track. Because, you know, when the season started, we expected Pirates to really kick off from where they were last season and build on that. But it hasn't been a great week in any way or form for the Buccaneers. But a side that is having a fantastic week, and we'll be hoping to continue with that, is SuperSport United. 3-0 during the week in the AFSA Premiership, 3-0 as well in the MTN 8, both times against two of the big sides in South African football. Young players showing up, experienced players showing up, Joe. I don't know. Has SuperSport United turned the corner after being beaten by Sundowns in their opening game of the season? Where do you stand on that?
Look, I think the MTN 8 semi-final is going to be a big test for them.
Yeah.
Obviously, having lost in the first game. But you have to have a look at how they turned around, you know, the first defeat of the season, because that actually could have things could have gone south.
Yeah.
But they recovered quickly, beat Orlando Pirates 3-0. And I think it was a wise of them to play that game at Mbombela. You know, the Pirates, psychologically, they're always thinking, hey, 5-0, are we going to get another Chisapama at Mbombela? What's they've conceded?
No, I don't lie. At 3-0 with about 25 minutes remaining, I was like, we are going back to 5.
There we go again. And then you're gonna lose the coach. You know, straight after the game.
You know,
but yes, seriously.
Go ahead, continue. You know,
But seriously, I think.
Now go on, Joe.
No, go on, John.
I was saying, look at the player. I think look at the players. Young Bule. This youngster is just a marvel to watch.
Yeah.
You know, Bradley Frobler seems to have found, you know, a fine somebody compliments him. in up front in Gabuza. Gabuza, remember, he was booed by his own fans, you know, against Pirates. But the coach persisted with him to say, you know what, he's got quality, he's a fighter. He puts him on against Vets and he does the job for him.
Yeah.
That built his confidence. The fact that he was able to take the ball to say, I'm going to score this penalty, and he scored the penalty. I think a lot of teams are going to struggle against SuperSport United this season.
Yeah, Ola?
Unlike you guys, I'm not moved whatsoever. SuperSport did this last year. They went on a 12 or something game unbeaten run.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, they were scratching at, you know, they were clutching at straws where they were going to get into the top eight. So, I'm not fazed whatsoever. But what I will say, where I think Coach Tembo has to be given praise, is what he's done with Gabuza. Guys, we're talking about a guy that was pronounced dead upon arrival this season.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was chased out at Orlando Pirates, essentially. And, you know, Kaitani Tembo looked at him and said, no, listen, I have a game plan here, and it involves this guy. And I think there's a page that a lot of coaches in South Africa can take from that. Because often we sign on reputation and we sign on name. Gabuza is the complete opposite. His reputation was down and his name was down.
Yeah.
But there was something that Kaitani Tembo saw and said, you know what, I'm not going to listen to the press. I'm not going to listen to the media, Black Twitter. I'm not listening to any of you, right? There is something I see in this guy that is going to fit into my system. And I wish a lot of coaches can just adopt that style and sign players that, you know, if you can see that, listen, I can use this guy for this sort of game plan that I have, it can work. A guy that comes into mind is Chabu Maluleke, as much as he's a vampire and he's probably 105 years old, right? But the guy, there's something that guy does on the field that, you know, I think he could give, you know, a team like a Chiefs or Pirates extra. You might not want him to start every game.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm sitting here and there's a post of the Chiefs 2004 team and I'm looking at Shoes Mushweu. When Chiefs brought Shoes Mushweu back in those days, they didn't, it was house money. They didn't expect, you know, Shoes to be, you know, rolling back the years. But there was something that Shoes could bring that they knew would work. And Gabuza has exactly done that. And I'm telling you now, I mean, you're looking at the Bafana setup. What was the one issue we had at EFCON? It was goals.
Don't know.
Right? It was goals. And I'm telling you now,
Gabuza and Bafana,
I'm not saying, Gabuza must replace people like Lebo Motiba or something. But what I'm saying is that maybe there's a strategy where you have the bigger guy in Gabuza and Khrobla operating in and around there. And I think, you know, we might have to start putting some respect on Gabuza's name.
We've got a tall guy in Las Vegas. Exactly. I wanted to ask, Joe, what do you think? Because, I mean, it's very early in the season, but it seems like there's, you know, a good understanding between Khrobla and Gabuza. You know, from you know, if you outside looking in, they both seem like similar type of players, but they seem to work.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Why is this Gabuza Khrobla, you know, a partnership starting to take off like this?
I think just the hunger, the desire to, you know, to make things happen. And I think also the one player who also does makes things happen for them is the young Mbule. I mentioned Mbule. Just watch him, you know, on the ball, you know, the confidence, you know, his distribution. He seems to be focused.
Yeah.
And then add another one, you know, in Section 10, you know, Kalinge. You know, once he starts playing, people will probably start referring to SuperSport as your Pirates light, because then you've got the Kalinge, you've got a Gabuza there who's probably going to be winning matches for SuperSport this season. So I can't wait to see Kalinge, you know, also playing in the coming matches.
That's going to be very good to watch. But and it's, what really has been sort of taken me by surprise is just how enterprising SuperSport United look going forward. They haven't been a team that you would, you know, refer to as enterprising going forward for a couple of seasons now, but they seem to have something good going on. And again, yeah, they are going to, you know, disappoint a lot of teams this season, especially if you come at them at face value. So congratulations to them.
Yeah.
They're through to the MTN 8 semi-finals, where they will meet it really doesn't get easier from there. But you know, they would have probably looked at that draw and hoped for either Highlands Park or Polokwane. But meeting Sundowns now, some say it's a good thing because they can literally get their revenge immediately. Others say, yeah, no, it's the end of the road. Ola, where do you stand as far as that is concerned?
You know what? I think a game like this for SuperSport, I think it's come at a better time. Because remember, I think SuperSport for them, we've got to put some respect on their name.
Mm.
These guys are, you know, PSL champions too,
yep.
Right? And it wasn't,
Kings as well.
It wasn't 50 years ago. It wasn't, this is, we're talking about recent history. So they do have some pedigree. And, you know, they want to add on to that.
And in cups and especially.
Exactly, and in cups as well. So I don't think they will fear Sundowns this time around. I mean, even in the league game, you know, it's not like they were outplayed, you know, completely. It was just one or two mistakes that literally led to their demise. So I think it's a good time for them to say, okay, we can regroup. The first game didn't go so well. Here's what we've learned and we're making amends.
Mm.
And I mean, I don't think you can beat Pirates and Bidvest 3-0. And go into a game, I don't care at what stage, against Sundowns, and be fearful. Mm. So I wouldn't be, and I'm going to call this now. Joe, I hope you can chip in $50 with me on here. And I'm going to call this an upset, and SuperSport are going to beat Sundowns.
Who are you betting against?
No, SuperSport will beat Sundowns.
Okay, all right. Joe?
Yeah, look, I can't disagree with you there for a few reasons. Obviously, Sundowns, they still have got the, you know, commitments to worry about, but you know when it comes to you know derbies, this is one of the most exciting derbies we have in the PSL. Soweto derby is big, but Pretoria derby is more exciting. These guys, they don't hold back; they go at each other. They give the fans, you know, value for money. When you go watch this team, you leave the stadium and thinking, "Wow, this was really an exciting game."
Mm.
And then that's what we're going to have. Yes, SuperSport might win it, but it's going to be close. It's over two legs. Maybe they want to hold back in the first leg and then go at each other in the second half. But whichever way, we're going to get value for money in this game.
I wonder if both games are going to be played at Moripe Stadium, home and away.
Oh, there was AC Milan and Inter Milan.
Yeah.
There was a cup season where they had to play both legs at the San Siro.
Look, you can go Lucas Moripe, and then the other one you can go to Loftus.
Yeah.
Or if you are smart, SuperSport, take them to Mbombela.
Take them to Mbombela. I think, yeah, that's what SuperSport United must do. Just take them to Mbombela. It will work out. But what I think, what will be interesting, before we talk about Polokwane City and Highlands Park a bit, because they deserve a shout-out as well. But for these two teams, who do you think needs this cup more, Joe? Do you feel Sundowns, and we, you know, it's well-documented how long they've gone without winning this title. Do you think they need it more at this stage, or do you think SuperSport United, are in need of a cup title at this stage?
No, both of them, they need it. I mean, SuperSport United, obviously, you know, to win, they haven't won cups in it's been a while now. I mean, for former league champions, you know, they also need to start winning. I think probably the last one, Nedbank Cup with Stuart Baxter. Peter also, on the other hand, if you think, I think this is the only cup that he hasn't won as a coach. So there's an extra motivation for him to say, I become the first coach to win all cups on offer, you know, on the South African football season. So that would be something amazing for Peter. Then he'll be left with nothing really to win, whether he goes to Bafana, he goes to Paris or whatever. He'll say, I've won all the cups on offer. So for both teams, I think, There's a lot at stake for both teams. That is why I'm saying they're not going to hold back. They're going to give us great value for our money.
Mm. Well, what we do know is that only one of them, if either of them win, only one of them will be winning, and only one of the two will be in the final. Because in the other semi-final, Polokwane City against Highlands Park. We've touched on Highlands Park. Polokwane City, there's another team that, you know, has seemingly decided to pick up from where they left off last season. A great feat for them to be in the top eight. And the way they played against Cape Town City, does suggest that should they be in the final, whomever they meet, it's not going to be an easy outing, is it?
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. I mean, I think about it. I mean, the banter between them and Cape Town City, and for them to go and beat Cape Town City away from home. Yes, I understand Cape Town City were playing, you know, not at their home venue, but they were playing in Cape Town. But for Polokwane City to score and not to concede against Cape Town City, you know, that is something else. It shows you the hunger, the desire. You mentioned Kola, you mentioned Jabu. You know, he's probably on his final legs. It will be nice for him to leave or to end off the season with something, you know, to say I've won at least a trophy with Polokwane City. But they've got a lot of exciting players in that team. But also Highlands Park, it's another team. If you look at Owen Dagama, you know, how he's built his team, you know, Freeze as well. You know, the way they put the team together. It's very exciting. It's a team that doesn't go not to lose, but it's a team that goes out to win. And I enjoy watching teams like that. A team that goes out to win, not a team that goes to say, let us not lose the game. That's not the kind of team that you want to watch.
Okay, all right. So we've heard you and Ola say that SuperSport United have a good chance of getting past Sundowns in the first semi-final. In this particular one, which way do you see it going? Polokwane City or Highlands Park?
Hey, it's going to be tight. I'll probably say Polokwane City, but it's going to be very close.
I must say, I'm also jumping on Joe's bandwagon there with Polokwane City. You know, one thing I must say about Polokwane City is that, you know, they're the one team that you can be guaranteed you're going to, you know, there's going to be some entertainment. And I'm not just talking about dribbling, I'm talking about some good football, because they actually play some really, really good football. And I think in the game against Cape Town City, if you noticed, you know, they actually tore Cape Town City apart tactically. And for the first time in a while, I saw Ben in a post-match interview where he was lost for words. And, you know, you've got to give credit to the owner of Polokwane City over the last, you know, let's say 3 years, because they've also made some significant investment in making sure that they are competitive. And these are the sort of teams in our footballing landscape that, you know, we need to see emerge. We need to see those teams. Because remember, we always talk about the big three, and obviously, you know, Wits also being in that four, and maybe SuperSport. But you look at our cities, you know what I mean? In Cape Town, we've got one team.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now it's Stellenbosch. But, you know, you look at Bloemfontein, we've got Celtic and so forth. And then you look in Polokwane, there is a hotbed that is brewing. In fact, it's there right now. It's there. So we need to also expand our level of appreciation and, you know, open our eyes to those cities. Because you look at what's happening in the Premier League. It's common now when you say, you know, playing Stoke on a cold, rainy night on Tuesday. Do you know what I mean? But that has sold, you know, it's been sold to the world so much so that Stoke have four Champions League winners in their team. Do you know what I mean? So there is a culture that's brewing in Polokwane where
on a hot Sunday afternoon.
That's
in
exactly
Toyando.
Where I was going. Do you know what I mean?
And we need to attract
more of these players, you know, to say, hey, look, man, there's something happening in Polokwane City. Mm. You know, why must I sit at the bench of Chiefs and Pirates, you know, and then in a year's time, I might not even feature when Polokwane has got, you know, a lot to offer. So I think big up to Polokwane and, you know, their owner for actually taking that team seriously and investing in it.
Mm. Okay. All right. And they could find themselves in a cup final. Could Polokwane City up against Highlands Park in one of the semi-finals of the MTN8. Joe, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it. We'll have a cup of champopo for you just to show our how grateful we are for your time and your expertise as well.
Yeah, it's been great. I know you also wanted to talk about the top strikers. You're never going to have time for that, but think about Daniel Mudauchi, Sam Farma, Dennis Slaughter, you know, Sean Bartlett when he came back to South Africa. Those are some of the key strikers we want to go back to, and either way, he scores more than 20 goals a season.
So no pressure on the likes of Gabuza and Bradley Krobler then.
Yeah, definitely. I think Gabuza can do it. He's got
it. Guys, you can't take a man who scored 2 goals per season on average for 10 seasons and expect him to score 20. Guys,
he has to compete against Eric Martel first. So.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, guys. Been good. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
You are listening to the Pitch Invasion Podcast, the podcast for football tribalists.
Just a reminder that football fans are both the dumbest and the smartest people on God's green earth. That was Tottenham Hotspur fans singing their love and appreciation for VAR, which once again was at the center of attention when they met Manchester City. If you throw back a couple of months ago in the Champions League, the knockouts was VAR again that denied City a last-minute winner. And fast forward a couple of months, and it was VAR again that denied Gabriel Jesus what would have been a winner and an enthralling Premier League clash between the two sides at the Etihad. But at the end of the day, to all the final score, VAR to thank.
Yeah, you know, the best by VAR, you know, VAR, VAR, VOOM. You know, VAR is a funny topic because, I mean, so many people over the last, I'd probably say 10 to 20 years, you know, have been calling on some sort of a review system. You know, we've had goals being denied, clearances off the line. You remember the Carroll Man United incident.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, people have been calling out for some form of technology. And now that it's here, it seems like, you know, people are now like, oh, actually, you know what, maybe we don't want this. And, you know what, I'm not going to complain about VAR because I'm the sort of person that I've called for some form of technology to review certain decisions. And I believe there's so many games that would have changed the course of history. So many coaches, so many clubs, so many players, you know, careers were ended because VAR wasn't around. So I'm pro VAR, and I think, you know, football fans need to look at it from this perspective, that every sport has got some form of review system where technology is used.
Yeah.
You look at cricket, you with the hotspot, you look at tennis, and so forth, right? Every sort of sport has that. And if the decision is right, what are we complaining about?
Because now,
you know what the issue is now? Now the issue is, okay, yeah, but we just want at least a little bit of a controversy in football. You've had it for 20, 100 years, and how many, like I said, how many jobs were lost because of that, you know? So I think we can't be, on the one hand, you know, want a piece of it, and then say when it's here and say, yeah, but it's ruining this aspect. You either have it or you don't have it. And quite frankly, to the teams that, you know, like Man City, who have been burnt by VAR, how about just winning the damn game? Do you know what I mean? How about winning the damn game?
Well, some might say they did everything to win that game. They were on top of Spurs for the majority of the clash before that moment, really, of controversy that you talk about. And I want to ask you, though, because you mentioned something about the decision. Was it the right decision?
Letter of the law, spirit of the law. Spirit of the law, as a football fan, let it go, ref. You know, like, just play on, man. You know, but at the end of the day, when you look at it in VAR, a hand was used.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? A hand was used to give Man City the advantage for that ball. Because, let's face it, if it went off the shoulder, it would have probably bounced, taken a funny bounce somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A different direction. Or maybe if it hit his head, it probably would have gone higher or backwards. Mm. Maybe would have gone in, who knows? But the hand made it in such a way that it fell perfectly to Gabriel Jesus because it took off momentum off the ball.
Yeah.
So that's not allowed.
Who called for VAR? Was it the ref or was it VAR actually instructing him to wait? We're gonna have a look at this again.
You know,
because I asked that because it was such minimal, such small margins. I mean, naked eye, you did not see anything wrong with it.
You know, that's the other interesting thing. And I, being a solutions-orientated person, I have a solution to this. Excuse me. I think, like you see in, you know, the NBA, you see in the NFL, coaches have challenges.
Yeah.
A coach's challenge. And I think, you know, you see it in cricket as well. And I think every team should have a maximum of 2 challenges.
Per game.
Right, per game. And I think that will soften VAR for me. Because I think if you say every team has got a maximum of 2 challenges, then we can say, okay, guys, you don't want us to review every single thing. Because at the end of the day, guys, this is a contact sport and it's a physical sport, right? Half of anything that happens in a corner with VAR is a penalty, right? So there is also the human element of, okay, how much do we let go? You know, so I think in order to marriage, you know, VAR and the spirit of the game and, you know, the physical side. I think every coach needs to have a maximum of two challenges where, you know, you either throw a flag or you press a button or whatever, and you can say, I would like that review. Because then at least as fans, because remember, the fans at the stadium don't know that, you know, who's calling VAR, and they can't see it on the screen. So I think it gives us as fans also a perspective into, okay, it's being challenged and they want to see if the decision is right, as opposed to, okay, some referee deems that this is right and only he's looked at it.
Yeah.
He hasn't made the decision. And that's what the NFL get right. Because if you challenge something in the NFL and you get it wrong, your challenge obviously gets taken back. Yeah. But it's your decision that you've taken that you're saying, okay, I think there was a foul there and I'm putting my challenge down. And I think that will probably be, you know, the better course of direction to, you know, make VAR more acceptable in football.
I'm wondering to myself right now, did Spurs in that moment, the defenders were around that area, did they actually appeal?
No, they didn't.
That's the thing.
Hence, I'm saying to you that there is the human element of football, because it is a contact sport. So, you know, we're trying to get an advantage over one another. We're pushing, we're pulling, and so forth. Yeah. So, that is going to happen. But the problem is that, in most cases, this is one of the issues I had with diving and fouls and so forth in football, is that, you know, the same foul outside the box, certain fouls outside the box, and certain, you know, that specific foul, if it happens in the box, is not a penalty, and vice versa. The ref will say, play on.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, questions came into play as to, okay, well, what is a foul? What is not a foul? Because then players, you know, dive, because they think, okay, well, outside the box, I might not get this call, but inside the box, if I fall, right, a penalty is not going to be called. So, I just think, honestly, the players obviously are still playing within the competitive spirit of the game, you know, the physical side and so forth. So, in the heat of the moment, the adrenaline, I don't think anybody's going to be mindful that, gosh, you know, if I actually tug on his arm, VAR might be watching. But, because it's there now, that is going to constitute as a foul. So, my system, get a challenge review system. Every coach, every team has got two challenges, and you work it from there. And again, we go back to cricket. You look at how cricket has handled it, right? There's the umpire's call, right? And it's whether if it's outside the line. So that even within that system, it tries to give the umpire the benefit of the doubt as much as possible, because at the end of the day, he's made a decision. I mean, bowlers are bowling at 140, 150 kilometers an hour. He has to look for no balls and look up for LBW. So, you know, man, you know, that's quite an ask. So they've made sure that the technology in some way doesn't necessarily change his decision, but it either corrects or supplements his decision, because it's all about where you can see his perspective. And I think with VAR, it's not about anybody's perspective. It's whether handball.
Yeah.
You know, goal
which,
or no
which
goal.
Which is, I guess, it really doesn't help in it. I'll tell you what, one team and coach that is absolutely tired of VAR is Pep Guardiola. He's had enough of VAR in the last couple of months. And
win the games, Pep.
Look, I'm not a City fan, but they did more than enough to try and win it. They had plenty of chances.
Where was Gabriel Jesus when the score was 5-0 against? Where was he?
Unfortunately.
No one said anything about when Sergio Aguero's penalty had to be retaken.
Yeah.
They didn't say Jack. Do you know what I mean? Where was Gabriel Jesus then?
I feel you. But either way, Spurs definitely got away with one there. But what it does again show, I mean, they managed to fight back twice. What it does show is that, once again, Mauricio Pochettino is going the right direction at Spurs. And they've got another great chance of making the top four this season. I saw questions being asked, are they ready to challenge for the title? Again, I just think they'll fall just short. But they are going to be a fixture in that top four once again. But another weekend where we saw Liverpool win, had to grind out a result. Arsenal had to grind out a result. Saw a draw between Spurs and City. Chelsea, they dropped points. Yet another sort of setback for Frank Lampard.
If go back to what I said last week, collateral damage. That's what Frank Lampard is, and
they should have lost that game because Leicester. They should have lost that game. Strong.
You know, and I feel sorry for Frank because I mean, this is who didn't like Frank Lampard? He was one of those likable characters, likable players, and when he went on to coaching, carried that as well. And I'd hate to see his legacy be tarnished by this pre-season tour squad that they've left him with that he has to contend with for the rest of the season. Because, you know, you wonder now the sort of knocks into his managing career, you know, what that will do, you know, with this season with such a team. I mean, Steven Gerrard could have, I'm not saying he could have taken the Liverpool job, but, you know, he could have been in the mix for the Liverpool job, but he probably would have taken it at the wrong time. But now he's at Rangers and he's excelling and he's building his reputation. And maybe we're starting to wonder if maybe Frank should have just said, you know what, let me take the Chelsea job when I can spend.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, either way, what it has done this past weekend is paint a nice picture for us heading to. I think, you know, if you, you know, if you forget about the United Chelsea game, opening game of the season, can't read too much from that. But we're heading to blockbuster, real blockbuster number one of the season. That's going to be Liverpool up against Arsenal at Anfield. And a comment from Emery. He says, we don't ever want to play against Liverpool. Whether that was, you know, that can be taken with a pinch of salt, I'm not too sure. But Ola, from an Arsenal point of view, there's never a good time to play Liverpool. But again, you just have to play them. And the schedule says you have to go and play. Now you have to go and play.
Well, look at it this way. Last season, Arsenal were, you know, coming into the third game, right? And I think that third game was West Ham at home, which was not going to be easy. But they were...
Having lost the opening two. Yes.
Exactly, right? 0-6. And they go into Anfield 6-6 in terms of points. So I think the confidence and the spirit is a lot better. And the one thing that I think is in Arsenal's favor is that Liverpool don't seem like they've found that gear yet. Mm. I know they beat Norwich, but Norwich also looked good, you know, in that game. And they had to grind against Southampton. So, you know, we're not talking about a Liverpool that's in full flight here. Whereas Arsenal, they're also not in full flight, but, you know, they're in a better position than they've been coming into Anfield. And I think, you know, what's going to be crucial in this game, more than anything, of course, the defense, you know, of Arsenal, that's what's been the problem. But I think it's also just the big players now need to stand up in these big games. Because, you know,
who are Arsenal's big players?
Oh, well, Aubameyang. Mm. That's the thing. If you play Aubameyang and Lacazette, you know, they'll have to stand up. But I think, you know, Aubameyang to me last season was a fantastic player. But there were a few big games where I felt that he just didn't step up.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the Spurs penalty. You look at Man United. The City game. And, you know, you look at the Liverpool game too. And I just feel like the big players in these games this season are going to be called upon. So, Ceballos impressed me, you know, and I think he's going to have a really, really good game. He'll have to step up because, I mean, this is a guy that's played for Real Madrid. Mm. He knows all about that pressure. Aubameyang has to step up. If Lacazette and them start, he has to step up. And I'd like to see Pepe in the mix at some point. But the key thing for Arsenal is work rate. Because one thing Liverpool have in abundance is work rate. You cannot outwork Liverpool. The talent, I mean, Jordan Henderson, Wijnaldum and James Milner aren't exactly world beaters, right? But they have a level of, you know, hard work that is second to none. And I think if Arsenal can just match Liverpool pound for pound hard work, the talent is there. The goals, you know, Aubameyang, Lacazette, the goals are there. It's just all about work rate. And I think if you're Arsenal, this is the opportune time for you to play Liverpool before they've actually hit their strap. Mm. So I'm really confident as an Arsenal fan. And I wouldn't be surprised if we chalk out a draw. A win would really be a bonus.
Well, if they do win, Arsenal, if you guys do win, that's 3 wins from 3 to start the season.
You know, it was the first time winning back-to-back opening games in like 9 years or something like that.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Sheesh. That is a mighty long time if you're a Gunners fan. Mighty long time if you're at, you know, any big team, really, to not win your first 2 games in such a long period. But, you know, as Ola has just painted the picture, Arsenal will have to match Liverpool pound for pound at Anfield with that crowd. And, you know, again, perhaps this is the most opportune, if there ever was a word, time to play Liverpool, because I think we can all agree they haven't quite gone into gear yet. Even the Super Cup game against Chelsea, they were under pressure for large parts of that clash. In fact, the first 45 minutes, I think, was fair game
for Chelsea. You cannot tell me Ceballos is not licking his lips when he saw Mason Mount and them have a good game. You know what I mean?
We'll see. That's all I can say. We'll see. But hopefully by the weekend, United would have made it 2 wins from 2 as well. They've got a very difficult test up at Wolves this week. But yes, we'll see exactly what happens by the weekend when Anfield is rocking ahead of that Liverpool and Arsenal clash. And you had a chat about big players. There's a couple of big names that are still, you know, we're not really sure where they'll be playing when the full European season starts. That's in Serie A and La Liga get underway. La Liga is underway, Serie A not quite yet. I'm not sure if the Bundesliga is underway as well, but we did see Philippe Coutinho, now a Bavarian, at least for a season on loan from Barcelona. Another name that could very well end up in Spain, or rather Italy, is United's big money signing of Alexis Sanchez. I wonder if he's going to have another, was it piano introduction at Inter?
I can only imagine the bill that Ed Woodward and the rest of Manchester United have spent on the champagne that is currently in the freezer, waiting to pop it once they get rid of Alexis.
Oh, because man,
I think that's possibly Manchester United's worst transfer in a very,
and that's saying
very
something.
Long time.
That is saying something.
And you know, Alexis just didn't turn up for them.
Yeah.
He just didn't turn up. I mean, they didn't even get 10% of the Alexis, you know, from Arsenal. And what made it worse were the wages he was on, you know. So they're probably celebrating and thinking, okay, you know what, we've got that off our books. Because part of the problem with Alexis wasn't just on the field, it was off the field in terms of negotiating ploys. Because now players signing for, like Dybala comes in and says, well, can you give me what Alexis is giving, is getting? And they're saying, no, sorry, we can't. Well, I'm not coming.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's been the stumbling block for a few players that United have tried to sign, even within their own wage structure. So now that he's gone, that frees it up and they're able to reset their wage structure. And I think for Alexis, look, he has enough left in the tank. I mean, he had a really good Copa America. So
he did, actually. Yeah.
You know, and he's going back to familiar grounds in Italy. And I just feel that Alexis is one of those players that, you know, he thrives on confidence. You know, and when his morale is low and when his confidence is low, you know, he just doesn't play well. So hopefully at Inter, and he'll link up with his teammate, you know, a former teammate in Romelu Lukaku. So hopefully, you know, both of those guys can, well, Lukaku is still on the rise, but for Alexis, I think this is now the twilight years of his career. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully he can just put in a shift for the next couple of seasons in the top flight. Then I think possibly see Alexis in China in 2021. So I don't think it's a bad move for him, and he just needs to get away from the club.
I mean, it's a win-win situation really for all parties involved. Inter will get a player that at his best is still, you know, one of the best in the world. United will get rid of someone who hasn't lived up to the promise, and Alexis will get out of jail, basically.
I mean, they lost Perisic and they get Alexis Sanchez. Yeah. I mean, that to me is I mean, talk about direct replacement. You know what I mean? You're replacing like for like. I know Alexis hasn't played to that, you know, probably old Arsenal Alexis or Chile Alexis of old, but he still has enough left in the tank, you know, to put in a shift. And as far as Bayern go, obviously we're going to touch on that, getting Philippe Coutinho.
Mm. That, on top of Perisic.
That, I think, could possibly be the steal of the season. Mm. Because you're talking about now a cherry on top of the cake. Because Bayern Munich will always be Bayern Munich. They're a formidable team. But adding a player like Philippe Coutinho, that gives you at least 10 goals in a season from midfield. And I think that's what Bayern probably lacked last season. Mm. Was that outside of Lewandowski, you know, Robin and Ribéry obviously were on like the last sort of a bit of their legs. Mm. And they didn't have enough goals coming from midfield. And you know Coutinho is going to come and rifle in at least 10 goals this season. So I think that really boosts their chances of not only retaining the Bundesliga again, but I think in the Champions League. And you now have to wonder if you're Barcelona. I mean, having watched them against Athletic Bilbao, they look very shaky and plucky. God forbid they should play Bayern Munich with a very motivated and angry and charged Philippe Coutinho.
Okay, well, fair point. And Bayern, yeah, they go into that into this season of the Bundesliga again as favorites. So it will just really help Coutinho as well, just to get his confidence back, because he's another man that, you know, is a confidence player at his best. When he's confident and he's happy, he's easily one of the best midfielders and forwards in world football. So we're looking forward to seeing him in action over at the Allianz Arena. Another sort of really interesting sort of point that you've just made is the point of Barcelona. And La Liga has started. They started with a negative result at Bilbao. It's not the place you want to go if you're not confident. Bilbao will make it difficult for you, even if you are peak Barcelona. But again, we just saw what the Blaugrana are without Lionel Messi. At the moment, in fact, the last three seasons, you can safely say Barcelona without Messi is literally probably 60% less of what Barcelona can be.
Yeah, and I mean, even when Messi does come back, I mean, I honestly think last season was Messi's, you know, he could again prove us wrong. I think that was Messi's last season of that absolute phenomenal Lionel Messi 50 goal a season. I mean, yeah, I mean, he's coming in, you know, he's got an injury at the start of the season and he's just a different guy now. I think he doesn't care if he wins the next, they've robbed him the last two, but he doesn't care if he wins the next FIFA World Best or the next Ballon d'Or. I think he's really set now on just, you know, putting the finishing touches in his career. But the one thing that did disappoint me about Barcelona was that, I mean, you talk about Messi not being there, but then there was some, I mean, Griezmann didn't step up. You know, even Frankie de Jong didn't look anywhere near like the Ajax Frankie de Jong. Obviously, it's going to take some time, you know, to learn the Barca system. I mean, we've seen so many players that were good, you know, signed for Barcelona, and it probably takes them a season, you know, or two to adjust. But I just don't see what the structure is going to be without Lionel Messi. Mm. And that was what was disappointing, was that they just couldn't seem to get it right. And I mean, I don't think Messi is going to play every single game. Mm. So Valverde is really under pressure this season. I mean, he survived the Ajax last season, so he's really like under the watch.
All the more important then for them, if they are seriously in for Neymar, as much as we are led to believe, all the more important for them to actually go out and get him there. Because what we did see with Neymar at Barcelona is that when Messi was injured or was missing from the picture, Neymar, you know, had no problems taking up the mantle and leading Barcelona forward. So you still need that type of player, because if you got Suarez, who, you know, is...
Suarez
is out for some time now. So if that team, that Barcelona team, goes into the second game of the season and again struggles, you know, you are now playing catch-up again in a season where Real Madrid are meant to be the team still playing catch-up. But based on how they played with the players that are allegedly out of favour, then, you know, things can get a bit tricky.
You look at a motivated, financially backed Atletico Madrid this season. Yep. So, you know, they're going to be an interesting team to watch this season. And quite frankly, I think Barcelona, I don't think they're going to win the league this season, to be honest with you. I know it's just off one game, and, you know, Barca will, they'll still have their highlight games where they're winning 5-0 and tiki-taka is just, you know, the talk of the town for the next couple of weeks, Messi's free kicks and so forth. But, you know, even within preseason, there was just something about them that just didn't look, you know, formidable. And they carried it over into the first game against Athletic Bilbao. And they could have easily lost that game 4-0. Mm. You know, and Barca's biggest problem, to me, I think, is the defense. I don't know what the arrangement is with Barcelona and Gerard Pique, because, man, that guy's really past his prime. And, you know, they're just running straight past him. You know, it's not even a matter of his ability anymore. He just can't keep up. And I think they might have to look to move on from PK after this season. If not, maybe from as immediate as January. Because PK doesn't look the same. And his age and his legs, you can just see that, you know, this is a guy that maybe, you know, should bid farewell, you know, this season. And just go and join to America.
David Villa and Iniesta in Japan.
So forth.
Again, we'll see once Messi does come back how much of a rescue job we'll have to do this time. It's really been him and rescue jobs for the past 2.5 seasons at Barcelona. So we'll see what he has to do. I'm sure he'll be extremely happy if by the time he comes back, he's got Neymar to look forward to in the Barcelona change room as well. So still keeping an eye on that one. A lot of of rumors going on about which player is going to go, which player is going to be part of the exchange, how much PSG want, how much money they want, plus two players. Coutinho was meant to be, apparently, but now he's gone. So that opens the door for someone else to be included in that exchange. We'll see. We've got, 8 days?
Yeah.
10, 11 days remaining before the window? About a week and a half, basically. Yeah. Week and a half before the window does fully close, and a lot will happen between now and then. Make no mistake about that. But we have to touch on Real Madrid before we do go, because all the doom and gloom of preseason, and then they go to the Balaidos, another place where
it's a difficult place,
and very difficult place to visit. And again, you got players who just a few days ago were literally hanging on and not wanting to leave because they were being shown the exit door. They step up and they do the job.
No, you know what? You know, Real Madrid, guys, pound for pound, they still have one of the best squads, if not the best squad on paper.
Yeah.
You know? And I think Zinedine Zidane's no fool. As much as he may not want Gareth Bale, but he's no fool. He realizes, listen, he got a Champions League because of Gareth Bale with some a few assists from Karius, right? But he's no fool. He realizes that Gareth Bale is a threat, and he poses something in football that, you know, only the likes of Ronaldo does. That physical specimen who's fast, he's good with the ball at his feet, deadly inside the box, deadly in the air. That sort of player you can't leave out, you know, whether you like him, whether you don't like him. So I think you will see a lot more of Bale. And also, it doesn't serve Real Madrid paying somebody $600,000 and park him on the bench either, you know. So you don't want that to be, you know, the headline for the next, you know, 8 to 10 months as to when is Bale going to play, when is Bale going to play. And I think Zidane's going to play it smart. I think what he'll do is he'll play Bale in the games maybe where he just doesn't fancy, you know, the opposition being a threat, and just stick him out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't see anything, you know, that's going to go pear-shaped for Bale and his relationship with Real Madrid this season. Zidane has to play him, and he will. So I thought, you know, the way I'm looking at it now, you know, Bale has got nothing to lose. Okay, he didn't get his move to China. But hey, he's still getting £600,000 a week.
At Real Madrid.
At Real Madrid. And he knows they're going to have to play him at some point.
Yeah.
So I think Bale, at the end of the day, is the bigger winner out of all this, you know, shenanigans that's happened off-season. He's the bigger winner. And I think in Gareth Bale's case, To be fair, I know a lot of people have criticized him. Oh, he can't speak Spanish. He's not the most sociable guy and so forth. To be fair, he's been a professional. You know, look what happened with Koscielny in preseason with Arsenal. The guy, okay, he was promised that he was going to leave on a free and so forth, and things went sour. Guy just down tools, didn't come to preseason, and then releases that video of him receiving, you know, Bordeaux with the Arsenal top. Do you know what I mean? Whereas Bale, throughout this entire process, has been professional. He's turned up to training. He's put in a shift. Hasn't pulled these stunts of, oh, no, I'm sick, I'm not coming. He hasn't gone AWOL. So I think, you know, to be fair, Gareth Bale has really been a professional. And you're going to get that even on the field.
Yeah. All right. No. Good. Well up to him, actually, for showing up in game one and driving Madrid forward. And they won their first game. Barcelona didn't. Atletico looked really good. So we're looking forward to another really enticing season over in Spain. But that is pretty much all we do have then for episode 4. Thank you so much for lending us your ear over the past hour or so. My name is Luazi Zikubu.
Hola, Makwaza.
And from all of us here on Pitch Invasion, goodbye for now.
Pitch Invasion is the podcast for football tribalists. To contribute to the show, pose a topic of debate, or just complain about your favorite team, send us a WhatsApp voice note on +27 609 216977. That's +27 609 216977. Or send us a text message starting with hashtag Pitch Invasion. Remember to follow the Pitch Invasion podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under the username Pitch Invaded.